Dr. Carol Lieberman, a forensic psychiatrist, trial expert witness, also a columnist of Inside the Criminal Mind of Front Page Detectives, frontpagedetectives.com. Always a welcome addition. Doc, thanks so much for coming on with us. I know it's an early hour from the West Coast, but we certainly appreciate your presence.
You're very welcome.
Before we get into the whole Nicholas Cruz deal, let's get into the latest regarding the Brian Laundrie situation. As we all got word regarding human remains found, you had the notebook, you had the backpack there belonging to Brian Laundrie. Very strange, you know, very scripted with the parents, Chris and Roberta, alerting law enforcement. They were heading down to the reserve, found the place and everything else. Place was underwater at one time, I guess. And thus the finding. What did you make out of all that occurred yesterday, Doctor?
Well, you know, it just points out how strange and sadistic and a whole bunch of other words the parents are. I mean, now they're saying, the parents are saying that they told the detectives, the police, that he was there all the time, that a month ago the parents told them to look in this spot. Well, you know, first of all, they weren't that helpful. But in any case, why, if they were really concerned, now all of a sudden they came to look, they joined the investigators to look on this particular day when, lo and behold, they found his property and perhaps his remains. I mean, it really, if your son was missing for, I think, 5 weeks now, something like that. All this time, they didn't act like they were worried that their son was going to be found dead. I mean, that's the shocking part. They're gardening, they're tearing down signs of the protesters, you know, they're doing, throwing away the garbage, normal kinds of things. If they're really afraid that their son was dead. I mean, that's how you act? Why weren't you out there every day?
Yeah, I got to tell you, I know the attorney is representing Chris and Roberta Laundrie, that being Steve Bertolino, Long Island attorney at East Islip. And I heard him on an interview last night. And listen, the questions were asked, well, why don't they talk, right? Why can't they talk to the Petito family? See, this is the thing that sticks in my craw. Why haven't they communicated? And Bertolino basically said, because I told them not to. And listen, I understand of constitutionality and rights and everything else and amendments. I get it, okay? What about the right of just being a human being in trying to help the parents? The parents, the Joe Petito, Nicole Schmidt, James Schmidt. I mean, I don't understand it. How do you be so inhumane by being silent? You want to tell me the legalese involved and everything else? I understand that. Isn't there a humane condition of trying to help thy neighbor here? It's unbelievable to me.
Absolutely. Of course, you know, that goes along with what I had said about the parents quite a while ago, that I think that he was abused, and I called it a house of horrors, and what the way they've been in the past, since September 1st, the way they've been, you know, goes along with that. I mean, why they didn't talk, not just from when he was supposedly missing, but why didn't they talk, you know, when he came back without her? I mean, yes, it's just absurd. And I mean, certainly humanity should trump, you know, whether their talking could affect their son's sentence or whatever. But, I mean, it just isn't making sense. Plus, you know about the, they were seen mailing a box that said something like meal, it was something like, kind of like in a cardboard box, some kind of meal ticket, meal, like, you know, as if it were preserved meals that you could use when you're hiking. And they just sent that. And if they thought that he was dead, and it just doesn't make sense, who did they send that to? So, yes, it's really, I mean, it just kind of shows, not that that excuses him, but it shows what he grew up with. I hope that the sister realizes, you know, maybe now that if it is him, the remains, maybe she will start to talk.
Yeah, the sister whose name is Cassie was certainly, you know, been under a self-induced gag order of her own, really, and really kind of citing out the parents as far as, you know, she implores that the parents say something. And listen, the whole thing is just very strange, very scripted. You know, in a closing comment on my end on this case, and then we'll get on to the Cruz stuff, you know, I'm kind of surprised because, you know, all the reports, you know, you had that one guy, remember Dennis Davis, Dr. Liebman a couple of weeks ago, swears he encountered on the Appalachian Trail Brian Davis in a white pickup. You know, what happened in that type of deal? Was that ever investigated? Probably. We didn't really hear a lot. You know, all these other little sightings here and there, one of them being in Toronto. Listen, I know there's a resemblance many a times, but very, very strange, not only with laundry parents, but this individual who many said, you know, was like a chameleon. You know, he was described that way. Were you shocked beyond as far as when you heard this? In all likelihood, you know, this is probably Brian Laundrie, these remains. But is that a real shock to you, somebody who studied these types of situations before with individuals?
Well, yes and no. Of course, I had wanted him to be found in St. Mark's National Wildlife Reserve. That was what I had called the FBI and DOG about, because that was where the author of the book that he was reading, Annihilation, had come up with the, had been inspired to write that book, and it would just be very poetic if he went there, perhaps to die, you know, perhaps to commit suicide in that park. But I, you know, at this point, I mean, it's been obsessing the nation for enough already, long enough. I mean, not that I wish him to be dead, but like I don't know. I always said that I thought that he was still alive, but he would kill himself when he thought that the cops were closing in. So if it is him, we don't know when this person killed themselves or drowned or whatever happened to them, eaten by an alligator, whatever it was. We don't know exactly when. Perhaps we should be able to have some idea of that when they do studies of it. But I don't want the parents to get away with this. That's my strongest feeling. That's that, whether that's his body or not. I mean, the thing is, if it is his body and we never hear what the real story is about the parents, that would be disappointing.
You want closure, right? I mean, you want to see closure for these parents who have been going through hell. Frankly, you know, I sense closure in the fact that this guy will never walk the earth again. But then again, how do you find closure? And you know better than anyone as a psychiatrist, you've dealt with this type of stuff. How do you possibly get that full closure, though? Not knowing why. Why did Brian Laundrie allegedly Brian Laundrie, who we think is all at the center of it all, we kind of know that. Why did he do it, you know? And you never really will understand why. And that is not getting that full closure, correct?
Well, the hardest part for Gabby Petito's family is feeling guilty. I mean, of course, mourning her, but feeling guilty that they didn't recognize signs in him. You know, they've said, we thought she was safe with him. They didn't pick up the signs that he was a potential killer, you know, that he was what I call a prince of darkness. That he's so volatile and so potentially violent if he thought that she was going to leave him or she rejected him. And there, I think that's going to haunt them forever. Why didn't they realize, you know, why did they let her go into the woods with him? That's the, you know, really sad part, where as far as they're not being able to get closure.
Pretty much. But we'll see what the next couple of days certainly bring. Dr. Carol Lieberman with us. All right, let's shift to the courtroom down in Florida, where yesterday Nicholas Cruz, the confessed Parkland school shooter, returned and pled guilty to all charges, doctor, stemming from the February 2018 massacre of the Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School, deadliest high school shooting in U.S. history. And the judge ran them all down, the individuals, and on all counts, Cruz pled guilty. What led up to all of this, and what does it all mean, if you can map it out for us?
Well, you know, in contrast to Brian Laundrie, I feel that Nicholas Cruz really doesn't deserve the death penalty. The number one thing is, I mean, yes, he admitted to 17 counts of murder and 17 counts of attempted murder. He admitted, actually, he confessed right after the he did it, and now he pled not guilty, which I think may well be a mistake in the end, because if he would have continued with the plea of not guilty, at least there would have been more chance to bring in the psychiatric testimony. He is someone who was he was born with the deck stacked against him. He was born to a mother, Brenda Woodward, who was a homeless, violent career criminal. She abused drugs, crack cocaine during her pregnancy with him. She had she gave him up for adoption. Which made him feel for the rest of his life like he was unlovable. He was adopted into a potentially good family, with a comfortable lifestyle and so on. But then his father died when he was 6 years old of a sudden heart attack. And that meant his mother had to go to work and she really didn't have time for him. And so it continued. And he was born with a genetic predisposition to this, to psychopathy. And he had there are three symptoms that are called the triad of a budding psychopath, and that is torturing animals and setting fires and bedwetting. Now, he admitted to torturing animals and setting fires. He didn't admit to bedwetting, although he might it wasn't reported that he admitted to bedwetting, though he certainly might have, at some point after he was arrested. There were tons of calls, 45 calls at least to his home during his childhood for different kinds of violent acting out, threatening his mother, threatening his brother. I mean, this is someone who was mentally ill from day one. And he did not get really, who I blame the most is, the mental health, treatment center. It was Henderson Behavioral Health. And he apparently went there at times during a 9-year period, and he was missed. His diagnoses were missed. He was diagnosed with ADHD and autism and depression, but clearly they missed his schizophrenia. And in any case, if they had hints of that, you know, he was hearing voices, voices telling him to hurt other people and to hurt himself, and he did make suicide attempts. I mean, on and on. He talked in court yesterday. He talked about marijuana, that he wished that people wouldn't smoke marijuana. Now, he smoked marijuana as a self-medication technique, because he was trying to quiet the voices, marijuana and Xanax. And they might have quieted the voices, you know, temporarily, but they were really making his underlying condition worse. And the main thing with Henderson or any psychiatrist or hospital in Florida that he went to, they didn't Baker Act him. They didn't involuntarily commit him. And that is what he needed. And then when he was 18, he decided, you know, he could make the decisions for himself, and he decided not to continue treatment. And they just let him fall through the cracks. They didn't Baker Act him. They didn't commit him involuntarily. They didn't treat him sufficiently. And then, of course, the final thing was his mother dying in November, a few months before the February 14th attack, and which had all kinds of implications as far as reminding him of his biological mother who gave him up, and also the school that expelled him. So he felt he was expelled both by the school, Marjorie Stoneman Douglas, and by his biological mother, and then his adoptive mother who died. So it was a whole combination. I mean, he was heading towards this mass shooting spree basically from the time he was born. Nobody stopped him. He made many cries for help. He put things on social media, and the FBI didn't really follow up enough on it. Somebody contacted the FBI and said that he had written, "I want to be a professional school shooter." I mean, there were all these symptoms, all these attempts, cries for help throughout his life. And nobody answered.
Now, listen, you're right. Now, so many failures. Let's not forget how many times also enforcement was called to that household. What was it, 39 times, if one remembers? I mean, just dropping of the ball so many times. And, you know, listen, we'll see what it all brings. I mean, this long, drawn-out process. You know, you feel for the families because, you know, we talk about closure and everything else. Well, now you're going to have the next phase only, you know, January the 4th. That's what it is, you know, as far as the selection process and whatnot here. We'll see what occurs, but I'll tell you, there were a lot of cries for help, lots of cries for help. And you ask yourself, why wasn't anything done to contain this guy? He's 23 now. Obviously, he had massive mental problems here, and nobody did anything. We'll keep an eye on it. Dr. Liebman, always a pleasure for this early hour. We appreciate it. Forensic psychiatrist, trial expert witness, columnist of Inside the Criminal Mind in Front Page Detectives. Go to frontpagedetectives.com and learn more. Always a pleasure. We welcome you the next time. We look forward to it.
Thank you so much.